We're on fighting. Right.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Okay, let us look at the nuclear problem that we touched upon briefly last week. The fact that India has nuclear weapons and Pakistan is close to having capability to explode a nuclear device. And how this affects the stability of the area. Now, being a political analyst, which is more what I'm leaning towards, I'm only going to touch on this briefly. Nuclear activity, the fact that Pakistan and India are longtime rivals, it goes back to the splitting up of India as a whole into three different provinces: Pakistan, Bangladesh, and India. Bangladesh and Pakistan are primarily Muslim states. India is primarily, I say primarily, a Hindu state with areas that are, yeah, Muslim also. Amritsar, for example, is a temple, the Golden Temple at Amritsar. Anybody remember what went on there? It's a little bit before your time, I believe, Shane. What happened there was a whole load of Muslims used to launch terrorist attacks on the Hindu population in that area near Amritsar, supported by certain unsavory political factions in Pakistan. The area around the temple is a predominantly Muslim area, very militant area to be a better description. Now, that whole entire area of Pakistan, northwestern India bordering on Pakistan, and also what's the other country that's right there? That's begins with an A. Afghanistan are very militant type countries and provinces. Now, if certain things transpire, which are the testing of nuclear device, more friction caused by ethnic problems, then that area could become very unstable, with nuclear capabilities being in that area would heighten the situation. Now, depending on how militant the individuals are in those areas, depends on how high the risk is of a nuclear attack, one way or the other. One way being from Pakistan to India, or India to Pakistan. The fact that Afghanistan is brought into the equation, because it's right there on the border, and the fact that the Afghans themselves have a lot of experience with weaponry and are primarily Muslim and primarily extremely militant in that area and extremely skilled at warfare to top it all off, means that the Pakistanis may have troops that are seasoned combat veterans that have access to not only Russian weapons, but American weapons that they were given, which makes the whole entire area very volatile and worth watching. As I stated last week, I do not see the possibility as being high of a nuclear strike, mainly because everybody realizes that once a nuclear attack happens, there's going to be retaliatory attacks, and the area is going to be uninhabitable, and lots of people will die. However, if you get an individual that is extremely unstable and has their own agenda, then there are problems. Now, moving away from political fireballs, no pun intended, let us move into the markets. the stock markets. And an interesting article I was reading concerning fashion. Very interesting article, actually. And a comparison between hemlines and the Dow. Yes.
I've heard that one. Yeah,
too. Okay, what have you two heard?
As the hemlines go up, so does the market. As they come down, so does the market.
Mm-hmm. Now, the funny thing is that the fashions for fall, guess what?
They go down.
Uh-huh. Long down.
Mm-hmm.
Forever. Touching the ground. Hmm, interesting. If that is correct, take the Roaring Twenties, for example, the hemlines came right up almost to where they are right now.
Yeah, they went just a little bit above the knee.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, they went a little bit higher towards 1928.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, and then all of a sudden, like 2-3 months before, long flowing ankle length skirts came back into vogue, and the market went. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, if the theory is correct, and right now it's almost to the point of showing the underwear, if the hemline drops right down to the ground, oh dear. If the theory holds true.
If it's up to 900 points right now.
No. Just under 8,000. Now, the problem is, as far as I see, with the market on its downward trend, is that it has been pushing and pushing and pushing up and up and up. And as I've stated in the past, it's got to run out of steam eventually. Now, last time I made these comments, that it was fluctuating rapidly, I was hesitant to say if it would continue its upward trend or if it would continue a downward trend. I'm going to say and be bold and brave that it will continue this up and down motion for some time. It may even set a new record. But I see that as unlikely. What I do see is heavy fluctuation. One of the factors to watch is the technology markets and how they start to respond. The fact that the earnings have been wonderful for the past 3 years, and suddenly they're not making the profits that they have been. The profits have been very disappointing. Also, a factor into the NASDAQ, and I'm trying to stay hard away from this issue, is the current investigation and indictment of Microsoft. I'm not going to get into that because that is a whole political field that I'm trying to stay away from. Are you busy there?
No, I'm thinking because the whole thing with Microsoft is holding up the market. But if it does go through in a positive way for Microsoft, the market's going to take a wild jump.
Mm-hmm.
If it takes the other way, it's going to take a major downward slope.
Correct. Unfortunately, because Microsoft is so powerful, is so strong, because Microsoft is so strong, then there is the potential for certain agencies to try to get power by splitting it up, by forcing it to do its bidding. Now, the common complaint is that Microsoft has the only operating system that is used by computer users. That you cannot have a system that does not have some kind of Microsoft software in there. Is this so?
No.
Correct. Because there's one up there that has nothing to do with Microsoft in it. if they sit back and do what they should do, which is nothing, and let Microsoft go about its own business, Microsoft is going to find that it does have competition. There is a group right now that is developing an operating system that is just as good, if not better. Can't give you names. And there is also another group that is experimenting with a system that is far superior to both. And it's cheaper. And it doesn't take as long as either system to activate. It depends on the individual and what the individual tells it that it, the individual wants it to start up with. For example, if it wants to start up the individual wants it to start up the just the workbench, that's all it would do. If the individual wants it to start up the workbench and have various other systems ready to be activated at a moment's notice, it will do that, whether it is one extra system or 100. This speeds up the speed of the operating system. The thing about Windows 95 is it's not an OS. It is a whole load of programs designed to run together, to operate together, but it is not the OS. It's not the operating system. Is that correct, Russ?
DOS version 6, I think it is the operating
system. Correct. So, Windows is not a problem because it is not the operating system. The government is saying that it is. It's not. I don't know where they're getting their facts from.
Well, everybody uses the same term.
And it's kind of a follow my lead that type thing. It goes back to the same procedure as nicotine, tobacco. It's because the money. Okay. Now, any questions?
Mm-hmm. Fluctuation in the market today, mm-hmm. today's market.
It's a day that's fluctuated. Believe,
now, this is my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the speed of communications is a lot.
Oh, yes, most certainly.
When back in the 20s, you didn't have the speed of communications you got today.
Yes and no. You had the
wire. You had teletype, which is a tape running out of the machine, but you didn't have the worldwide communication instantly like
no,
today.
No, it was probably about a 10 minute delay from one place to the other. That's as long as there was connections. There's a big word there, the connections between point A and point B.
Yeah, if their telegraph or phone lines weren't crooked, well, actually, it was all telegraph.
Mm-hmm. Right, and telephone.
Even over the phone.
The telephone was just starting to get going.
Yeah, right. And so the telegraph mm-hmm. was... your main means of communication,
yes.
Smoke signals.
Mm-hmm.
But
personally, I prefer
but
smoke
today
signals.
You have instant communication mm-hmm. all over the world. I think that's why you have so much fluctuation. In this
oh, market. Most certainly.
Because now they're talking about, well, the Nissan market's down, or the Nissan. Well, who cares about the Nissan market? Let's pay attention to our own business.
Yeah, and unfortunately, is what happens in the Nikkei market in Japan affects what happens in the F&T index, and that in turn it affects what happens in the NASDAQ or the Dow Jones, which in turn affects what's happening in Australia. You see, it goes from where the sun comes up first, who opens first, which is Japan, to who closes last, which is in Wellington, in New Zealand. So you see, it works in this whole big circle. Now, if it's a bad day in one place, it means that there is a possibility, a higher possibility than a good day in another place, which means that the next place that opens, let's say we start off with Japan, Japan opens and they drop 158, okay? Which means that when the London market opens or the Frankfurt market opens or the Madrid or the Paris or the Vienna or Warsaw, when they open, yeah, their chances of having a bad day are higher, let's say they have a bad day, which means that the chances are even higher for a bad day in the United States, which means more than likely it's going to be a bad day in Wellington. The following morning, just as Wellington closes, Japan opens back up. Let's say they have an okay day. You know, they're up just a tad, which means that the chances are now higher that it's going to be up in Warsaw, which means it's going to be a possibility it's going to be higher, a higher possibility than Warsaw, the possibility that it's going to be higher again in London, which means that it's probably more than likely going to be a good day in New York. Now, let's throw a little bit of an equation in there. Let's say Japan opens and it has a bad day. Warsaw opens and it has a, okay kind of day. It now is a possibility either way for the London FT index to have a good day. Let's say that has an okay day, which means that the chances are in the United States either way. Could have a good day, could have a bad day. See, that's where it starts to get a little tricky on predictions, is that if it's a constant down, 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 more than likely it's going to be down. Not will be, more than likely. There is a possibility that it could be an okay day. You know, up maybe 10 points, maybe down 2 points. That's an okay kind of day. That's the way with the instantaneous communication that things work.
Well, the question's been asked whether or not that's such a good thing. Because of the instantaneous communication, if there is a depression, a crash, or some problem somewhere else, then basically you're going to have computers which are on automatic mode instantly communicating their desires for all of their people who deposit money into those basic funds.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, sell here because all these parameters are met.
Yes, in a way, it's designed to save money. However, there is procedures to stop that. But at a certain point,
speed bumps.
Correct.
You stop them; it just slows them down. It
slows them down long enough for people to respond.
But if there's something really bad, people aren't going to really respond too much to the fact that, you know, well, all right, let's think about this. Now let's dump it.
Well, if you remember when the Dow dropped 550 points in the space of 6 hours, trading ceased for that day.
Right.
That gives everybody enough time to regroup and look at the situation. And it bounced back bigger than it had ever done. And in the following week after that kind of loss, it bounced back and bounced back over by 100.
What do we do? Run you off?
No. I've run out of time. Besides, I've got to go and talk to a young lady that is misbehaving.
Okay. See you later, babe.
Hurry. Hello.
Hi, darling.
Hey. How's it going?
Great. How about you?
It's going good.
Super.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Children problems.
Children problem?
Mm-hmm. Minerva is misbehaving.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. Minerva.
That's Tia's middle one. The one that thinks she's a cat.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me see if I'm doing a malt job tonight.
Again?
Mm-hmm. Okay, ambassadorial duties. Next week, we have a guest speaker that is returning from Sirius. So, if possible, it would be appropriate for an early training session. Preferably, the guest speaker is requesting daylight. Russ, you know what that entails.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dinner after the session.
Probably that might be appropriate. Could be a long session too. Okay. Also, the following week, we will have a special guest speaker. Somebody that has communicated before and is an excellent communicator, as was requested. I think you know who that is, Russ. We've finally been able to line them up and get them set for a channeling session.
Maybe these are actually a moment who did the whole nine yards.
It was a combined effort.
Okay.
It was a team effort that was a learning experience for both.
I can believe that.
Yes. Okay. Now, the upcoming discussions. It seems to me, and I mentioned this to you a while ago, Russ, that things have slowed down a little bit on it. Okay, it's getting to the point where it's necessary to start to pursue it again.
Okay.
As Samantha said, yeah, don't crucify yourself. What was his exact words? Don't crucify yourself. I had an experience at this. So it is important to take your time, but not let it drop totally.
Right.
And what I may do next week is give an ambassadorial little speech. Okay, let's get on to answers and questions. Okay? As a reminder, Shane, what do I do?
What are you?
I'm a healer. I
heal.
People. That's right. It's something I enjoy doing that I don't get an opportunity to do much. Now, healing. There is physical healing and mental healing and spiritual healing.
Mm-hmm.
Let us look at the most common kind of healing. Mental healing. Dealing with mental problems. It is popular in pseudo-scientific circles to blame a lot of problems on repressed or hidden memories. This is Tosh and Bunk. Either it happened or it didn't happen. If looking at a dysfunction, the analyst comes to the conclusion that there was some kind of abuse, whether it was physical or mental, and it is being oppressed. And they talk the person into believing that it's an oppressed memory. Then you have serious problems. That is something to be careful to watch out for. It is common for people that have the need to talk to what would you call them? Counselors?
Shrinks.
Sorry?
Shrinks.
A good listener.
Head shrinkers.
What's a head shrinker? Isn't that a...
Psychiatrist.
Oh, psychiatrist. Psychoanalyst. Those are some of the shakiest areas because it is a subjective point of view. A psychoanalyst takes what they think they know, analyzes it with the aid of the person. They look at it and they come to a conclusion. Frequently, they come to the right conclusion. Just as frequently, they come to the wrong conclusion. I've noticed recently, and he has brought it to my attention, that there are families that have been torn asunder by so-called repressed memories of child molestation, when in actual fact, this wasn't the case. On the other hand, sometimes by opening up these wounds that have been repressed of such things as child molestation, beatings, mental torment, and so on, can cause more problems than it solves. It's kind of like picking a scab. Mm-hmm. If you pick a scab, it takes longer to heal. If you pick it occasionally, it's part of the healing process. If you pick at it constantly, it becomes festered and does more damage.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what some psychoanalysts do. They take a possible event and blow it out of all proportion and do more damage in the so-called aid for healing than is actually done. They may heal the person, but they destroy the patient.
Well, that's for sure.
Very strange. Very strange. So, it does, unfortunately, according to Thea. So there are certain ethical questions of healing when you're doing mental healing that need to be addressed. One is, if you suspect that there's a hidden problem, a repressed memory, is it appropriate to dig at it and find out if it is a real memory or a misinterpreted memory or a fake memory? Most people, when they're in healing sessions, that are in a counseling healing session, are very open and receptive to suggestions. You can basically turn them into puppets at that point. So it is a very strong ethical question on the healer themselves. Is the healer having a bad day? Does the healer like the person? Does the healer like the person that hates one of the people involved? You have to be very careful when you're picking at these things. And that healers that deal with this kind of thing should be put through a special training course to deal with morals, be able to repress their opinions, their points of view, their thought processes, and look logically at the facts. Not what is maybe, what maybe not, just the facts. So that is a way of dealing as a healer with mental problems, the first step, the ethical questions. Any questions? I can see I've stirred up a hornet's nest.
Now, one thing I've got is, oftentimes a psychologist is digging up repressed memories due to the fact that the person he is analyzing,
he or she,
has got a problem dealing with society or something that would be caused by some memory that is holding them back from contributing or expressing themselves due to the fact that they've repressed this thing and it's, you know, eating away at them subconsciously and they don't even know about it. Mm-hmm. It makes up the part of their personality and lifestyle.
Correct.
By bringing it out, they're effectively, you know, changing that personality, changing their lifestyle, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
Usually bad because everybody involved is usually hurt by it. But in their eyes, they're helping. They're healing that, what they call an abnormal or aberrant
behavioral pattern.
Mm-hmm. Because of the fact that something's been repressed for that long.
Sometimes it's best to not bring up repressed, so-called repressed or real repressed memories. Because as you pointed out, yeah, it does damage. In healing the patient, you destroy the friends. And you cause more problems. Some psychoanalysts do this and will have a whole string of patients that are all related one after another. Yeah. My wife found out that she was molested by her father. She's taking that out on me. She hates all men. What do I do? And goes to the same psychiatrist or psychoanalyst that was the person that brought up the memory.
Okay, I got a question, mm-hmm. if you don't mind. These
Yes, I do mind.
Oh. Okay, these patients
mm-hmm.
have learned to live with these memories or events that happened in their lives and they've gone on to build a fruitful life. Wouldn't it be better just to leave them memories and bits and coincidence and stuff alone?
In most cases, I would say yes.
Yeah, there's some cases where you'd say no, too.
Correct. And, yeah, in the cases where it's best to leave them alone, it's if the person is functioning reasonably normally. In those situations, if a patient was to come to a psychiatrist up here or a psychoanalyst up here, they would talk about, well, the problem, not the root cause of the problem, but how to fix the problem. Yeah. For example, let's make up a fictional person. Let's say there's a person that comes to one of our psychoanalysts and has an aversion to short people.
What?
Short people.
Now, how would you overcome that problem? And the analyst would discuss it with the subject and look at the fear and say, well, it's an irrational fear. Yeah, little people cannot hurt you. But maybe a long time ago, the person as a child was beaten frequently by somebody that was short in stature. Frequently. Mm-hmm. But has repressed that memory. Very unlikely up here. But I'm taking it as a hypothetical situation. Sure. So, how do you address and fix the problem that this person has an irrational fear of short people? What you would do is introduce them to somebody that is sitting behind a chair, behind a table, at the same height as they are. And they would be introduced and talk to each other regularly in the same setting.
Makes sense.
Now the person would get up, and maybe the person's taller. Maybe the person's shorter. Preferably the person's taller to start off with. And then after, let's say, 12 sessions, there is two people there sitting side by side behind the desk, appearing to be the same height as the person that they're talking to. And at the end of the session, the person leaves. And this goes on for another 12 sessions, where at the end of that 12 sessions, both people get up, and one is tall and one is short. And that is approaching the fear that the person has been getting to know somebody, that they don't know whether they're tall or short, on a one-on-one. And then from there, new person would be introduced that maybe is a little bit shorter than the second person. So that they get used to dealing with short people. So therefore, the problem is addressed. Now, it doesn't always work. For example, let's take a subject that has an irrational fear, but an irrational fear that is grounded in fact. And in certain environments, it's a healthy fear. Arachnophobia. Some spiders serve a very useful function. In fact, all spiders do. However, some spiders carry a deadly toxin. And having a fear of those spiders, because spiders are unpredictable, is healthy. How would you cure somebody of that fear? Expose them to spiders? Could be dangerous, not only in an emotional level or a heart level, but in a health level as well. Could be terminable. So fears like that, do you address them or not?
You can teach them about spiders.
No, that won't work.
It's a very tricky field to deal with.
I think the best way to go with that, darling, would be to educate a person to what is and what isn't a deadly spider.
Yes, I agree. But it still doesn't address the fear.
No, I understand that.
There is somebody I'd like to discuss this with, but I don't think they would cooperate because their irrational fear of spiders goes